And we'll just keep on going. Thomas Ehler.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, thank you for the invitation to share the hard work and our experience on impact evaluation. So thank you for the opportunity to talk. It's hard to come after the presentation of an outstanding paper on the randomized control trials and two very comprehensive presentations, but it makes my life easier in terms of focusing a little bit more on how we internalize all the good ideas that you have heard so far in EFAD. Sweden is a very important member country in EFAD, one of the leading member countries, so I don't think I need to explain what EFAD stands for, but just in case some people don't know what EFAD stands for, EFAD is the International Fund for Agricultural Development. It's a specialized agency of the United Nations based in Rome. We are one of the three Rome-based agencies, and what we have in common with WFP, the World Food Program, and FAO, what we have in common is, of course, our focus on agriculture, on food security and nutrition, and poverty. What distinguishes EFAD from WFP and FAO is that we are an IFI, an international financial institution. We give loans to governments for rural investment programs. And for heavily indebted countries, it's not loans, it's grants, of course. Our program of work is relatively small. Annually, we do about $1 billion of lending or granting, with a leverage on co-financing, obviously. It's about distributed in 30 projects. We have an ongoing portfolio of 220 projects worldwide in 90 countries. Half of that is in Africa. What I need to stress when we talk about impact evaluations is, since we are giving loans to governments, that the projects belong to the country. They are run by the government, not by EFAD staff. And therefore, everything we do in the project, from the actual activity all the way down to the impact evaluation work, is owned and driven by the countries. And that is a significant challenge, which I will come back to. We share all the common questions that we heard this morning here. Why do we evaluate? Which projects do we evaluate? Which methods? How do we use the impact evaluations then for further policy making? How do we manage, administer the impact evaluations? How will we go about mainstreaming all of that? How do we relate to the national systems? And then, of course, the very important question of the cost and the financing of impact evaluations. Why evaluate impact? I was amused when I read in the randomized control trial paper the concern about obsessive measurement disorder. We don't have that. I don't think so. But we believe that it is important to actually measure impact because we need to understand. We need to learn. Obviously, we need to learn what is going on. What impact do our programs have? What is the cause-to-effect relationships between what we provide as an input to the output, to the outcome, and to the actual impact? And we need to do that rigorously so that we can attribute it to our presence or our absence there. But what is also important is that we use that information as evidence-based knowledge to scale up. Scale up is not just about doing larger programs. It is also about having more effective programs, and it's also about informing policy. That is also part of the scaling up. So the link between what we learn from an investment operation to policy change, to institutional change, is something that is knowledge requiring. The previous speakers have dwelt significantly on the issue of accountability. Also in EFAD, there is mutual accountability all the way down from the project management unit level to the government, to EFAD, and EFAD, of course, to its donors. There is multi-layers of accountability with different requirements that need to be accommodated. The two pieces that I would like to add, maybe, that have not been made as explicit as I think deserve, is there is a lot of thinking going on, as you have heard, on methodology. What are the good designs? What are the good methods? What are responsible cost structures for doing this? Because these things are expensive. For us in EFAD, we spent a lot of time in the current initiative, on that question of methodology, because at the end of the day, we would like to make a recommendation to our partners on what actually works well, cost-effectively, under most of the conditions, circumstances. And of course, the final thing is, of course, that all that then leads to enhanced development effectiveness. In EFAD, we have had, we are probably one of the few institutions, I did a check on a few, not all of them, but one of our key foundation documents, the lending policies and criteria, written in 1978 by some highly visionary people, actually explicitly mentions the importance of monitoring and evaluation. It's a rare document. But it took us until 2003 to realize that we were not doing a good job to our founding fathers' plea. So we introduced what we called the RIMS, the Results and Impact Measurement System. And as was hinted at earlier on when we spoke about process evaluation, at that point in time, our member countries were satisfied that we could actually demonstrate how the money was used and how that translated into activity on the ground. So it was more at the input and at the output level. And there was satisfaction with the fact that we could say, well, we contribute to poverty reduction through these different inputs. Until 2 years ago, when we were negotiating EFAD 9, that our member countries said, this is no longer good enough. We need to know whether all this was necessary and sufficient, as was just stressed, to achieve poverty, which is our goal. You need to go deeper into the outcome and out the impact level. And we now have this initiative on impact evaluation going on to establish whether we actually have an impact and define that cause-to-effect relationship through our program. For EFAD, poverty reduction is our key objective. It's our core goal. We want to express our achievements on impact in money metric terms and poverty in money metric terms. Ideally, we would say something about income, but it's notoriously difficult, of course, to make any statement. Get household surveys that give you credible information on income. So we go through the route of expenditure and consumption, and we use, of course, different ranges of poverty lines, not one poverty line, not $125 a day, not $2.5 a day. We use the national poverty lines. That's the most relevant one. But at the end of the day, because we are doing agriculture development, we have a lot of participants in our projects that are not necessarily living below the poverty line. You have people that are just beyond the poverty line. Therefore, we are actually broadening the concept to economic mobility, but trying to establish the link between economic mobility and the impact on poverty. Even though we focus on expenditure, it is not always easy to get clear information on that. And therefore, we use proxy indicators like household assets, the nutritional status of children, the length of the hungry season. The current thinking in EFAD also focuses on, first, the issue that it takes a lot of time before you take people out of poverty. But what does happen when you do, for instance, the creation of self-help groups, which was one of the examples that was given earlier, is the empowerment of people, especially the empowerment of women. And we are trying to develop a measure. We are not alone. You're all familiar with the Women in Agriculture Empowerment Index, but there are a number of indices that relate to empowerment. We are in the process of developing that, again, as an early signal of impact to come. The other dimension is when we do an impact evaluation at the end of the project, we know that people have been taken out of poverty or not, but we don't know how robust that is. So what we are trying to develop also is a resilience indicator, allowing us to make an ex-ante statement on how resilient that particular result will be. So this is on the indicators that we are using. Now, when we measure these impacts, it has been repeated several times before, we want to be rigorous. Rigorous impact evaluation is important for the credibility, and the stakes are high. We know that if things that haven't worked or were working badly or had adverse effects are being repeated, that that is detrimental. So therefore, we need to be credible and rigorous. There are many different definitions. I have given here two of them, one from the World Bank and three IE. But ultimately, rigor means that we are able to move away beyond what we contribute to attribution, that cause-to-effect relationship. And what that requires is that we need to have a credible counterfactual. What would have happened if the project did not occur, and what has occurred with the project, and the difference between the two. We are helped when we can actually do the paneling of the data, that we can track the same households from the beginning to the end. That helps. And of course, it has been repeated before, we should avoid every single selection bias. In our evaluation work, the randomization is an important dimension of that. Now, in EFAD, you have just heard all the different methods that are being applied. In EFAD, we actually experiment, we work with several of them and combinations of them. We have currently ongoing five randomized control trials, experimental designs, with the support of the 3IE, the Agricultural Innovations Window, and they are focusing on agricultural innovation. One thing that maybe was not stressed enough is that randomized controlled trials, they are the gold standard. Everybody seems to believe that that is the gold standard, but it's a gold standard that relates to a silver bullet, one idea that makes all of the difference. And you can test that idea and see whether it works and how it works. When you start talking about agricultural development, it's a complex process. Rural poverty, it's complex. There is not one silver bullet. And that creates some significant complications in the evaluation design, as you were mentioning earlier. How do you design the research question? How do you actually design the experiments? But 3IE is helping us with their specific research protocol. So we are doing that. Then we have, of course, roughly 25 rigorous ex post evaluations, quasi and non-experimental designs, with five different centers of excellence that are helping us, research centers that are helping our projects to do this better. We are applying mixed methods. There is a theory-based element in it, and I'll come back to it. It's essentially quantitative, but of course also qualitative. And most of these evaluations are actually applying propensity score matching to actually establish the impact itself. Then we also have, from the data, these are all specially commissioned studies for impact evaluation, but we also have a lot of information that is coming from our projects, the RIMS data. So on those, what we do is a shallow dive, as we call it. The others were deep dives. This is a shallow dive. And as you know, shallow diving is a very dangerous exercise, so we're very cautious with it. We're looking more in terms of contribution rather than attribution, but we need that to get a picture of the overall impact of the entire portfolio of EFAD beyond the RCTs and beyond the 25 deep dives. You want to get a sense of how well are these 220 projects doing. Right. We are also working on the assessment of the impact, the evaluation of impact of the research programs we fund. If you invest in agricultural research, at the end of the day, and even the CGR centers now are starting to look at the impact in terms of rural poverty reduced. Most of the research centers stop at the level of varieties developed or varieties disseminated, not necessarily the multiplication and the impact of that. So there is a development there going on. As I said earlier, policy is very important. We are in the process of discussing with Mercosur in Latin America an exercise of evaluating the impact on policy on people, because we know that projects help poor people out of poverty to the extent you reach them, but policy change is the tide that makes all the boats rise. And that is the important piece. We are using systematic reviews, meta-studies, and the combination of all that material then allows us to do a bit of a statistical inference on the entire portfolio. So it's a very mixed bag of things, as I said, on a wide scale of rigor. I mentioned that the overall initiative, even though each impact evaluation is not necessarily a theory-based evaluation, but the overall initiative is theory-based. At the center, what we would like to see at the end of all of that work, at the end of 2015, is a coherent story on how different approaches to rural poverty reduction have had their impact. And we give a synthesis report. That synthesis report is driven by a theory of change that centers on improved food security, reduced poverty with the different dimensions. I have shown here the slide with a copy of that of the book of the food security learning framework that we've developed with 12 institutions, including DFID, World Bank, USAID, that have already been mentioned. But ultimately, the 8 dimensions of that, which include rural livelihoods, agricultural technology, natural resource management, gender, resilience, market access. So these are all the different dimensions that we are trying to capture in our evaluation. Now, let me share, I have 5 minutes and I'll hurry up a little bit. Let me share with you a few methodology challenges that are probably related to the specific reality that IFAD is funding programs in agricultural development, which is a very specific sector compared to the sectors that we've heard before. Randomized control trials. When you are in agricultural development, extension, technology dissemination, defining the researchable question is sometimes complicated because there are many ways to skin that cat. The randomization, it's been explained before that the randomization, beside the ethical part, it's also complicated to eliminate some farmers in an area from an agricultural service. Agricultural services are public services. You cannot deny services to people. So we have some challenges there. And it has been stressed as well, what is crucially important is the discipline that has to be followed in implementing the RCTs. We need to be careful with contamination of the control group. You need to manage the expectations of the people that are now in the control group and that may later on join the program through the pipeline approach. So you need the full commitment of the government and of the project management unit. If there is any doubt, if anybody has any doubts, don't even start it. It's expensive. You're going to lose credibility. Don't do it. On the exposed evaluations, our programs last on average about seven years. The projects that we are now evaluating were designed in 2000 and between 2004 and 2009. You all remember the 2008 and 2009 first food crisis and then the financial crisis. You can imagine the complications that gives us in terms of evaluating the impact, not necessarily the difference between the control group and the comparison group, because everybody has been affected in the same way, but the actual overall impact is quite important. The other dimension of agriculture, and I'm skipping a few of the examples, but is the multiple treatment. In any agricultural development program, you have technology development, you have extension, you have microfinance, you have market access, processing. The multiple treatment is a complicating factor in doing the impact evaluation and developing that chain of causality. Seasonality and climate change are, of course, affecting also our capabilities of doing impact evaluation. One other issue that was highlighted this morning in a very important way was the external validity. Okay, you do an impact evaluation, it's expensive, the project management units benefit from it, the government benefits from it, how do you get others to benefit from it? And what we've been trying to do is we take our entire portfolio and put it in a grid, as you see here on the right side, with, in the rows, the APR and ESA are basically our regionals, are the regions where we work. And in the columns, we have different project typologies, microfinance, agricultural development, livestock, fisheries, different typologies. So what we plug in all of the programs, and we randomly select in each of the cells one of the projects. so that we are not accused of bias, but we are sure that we have, for instance, if I take the column on agricultural development, that I have at least one project in each of the regions. So we have actually, under each thematic area, at least five projects that are being evaluated. This is one way where we're trying to increase the external validity. It's not sufficient, but at least we are trying to do that. Of course, it makes the exercise more tricky, more constrained, but at least we have something. Let me skip that. One slide I really want to come back on, because we did not discuss that too explicitly this morning. The cost of impact evaluations are significant. And when you know that you can take a person out of poverty for $250 a day, to spend $200,000 on an impact evaluation, you need to pose that question. We pose it, and we still want to do it, because it is more expensive not to know and to make further mistakes than to pay for it and to have it. That is why we want to do it. But still, when you see the ranges, an RCT costs from $500,000 to $1 million US dollars. I think you need to multiply that by 6.5 to have it in kroner, but you know that very well. Exposed evaluations range from $200,000 to $500,000. The shallow dives that we do using the data from our projects is $30,000 to $50,000. The options to finance them is you include them in the programs. And ultimately, the borrower or the grantee actually pays for the impact evaluation. They need to then be committed to impact evaluation. They need to be committed to your requirement to have knowledge, your requirement to have accountability. And this is sometimes where the shoe hurts. That the government of Kenya says, why should I pay for you to be able to report to Sweden? It's a good question. The other part is, of course, that is the approach we take at the moment, financed by standalone grants. So we top up the loan with a grant to do the impact evaluation, and we share the responsibility. The third option, and that is not a good option at the moment under financial constraints, where everybody is trying to reduce our administrative budget, is to increase it in the administrative budget. These are three different options that have very different process implications, also implications for the way you control it, the exercise, the way you control the results, and the way you can use the results. So I think the criteria that help us decide is who needs the knowledge. Is it a global public good, or is it a knowledge good that is specific for the country that you work with? And how much capacity building do you want to build into? One of the reasons why these evaluations are expensive is that when you get IFPRI to do a study for you, you pay Washington, D.C. salaries. When you ask a local center, a local university to do that, you have a different cost structure, but also tremendous impact on capacity. For the longer-term sustainability, I think it is important that you ask yourself the question, how do you procure those services? And as was said earlier, how does the staff of CEDA, how does the staff from EFAN oversee, support that? So I think it would be useful to raise that at the ODA discussion level. How does impact evaluations, how do they get financed? It's a very important piece. A few words on organizational setup in EFED. And I'm starting from the right, the green pie slice. We have taken a fundamental decision that results monitoring remains the responsibility of the project management units. The input and output level reporting, the first and second level of results, project management units can do that very well. There's no judgment in there. It's counting roads, it's counting buildings, it's that kind of counting number of group created. Then I go down to the RIMS compliance. Then this information comes to our program management department. They do the checks and balances and see whether we actually have a coherent story there on how the resources are being used. And then it comes over to the knowledge department, where I belong, and where we actually then support on the projects that have been selected the impact evaluations. Okay, so and that's in a different department from the program management department. We want to have a bit of arm's length. It's important. And then finally, at the end, when we have finished the impact evaluation work, we do have quality assurance. We have external quality assurance, which we are commissioning from 3IE. They are reviewing every single piece of questionnaire, method, design. They do that for us, and they give us the seal of approval, or not, as the case may be. But at the end of the whole exercise, we have our own independent office of evaluation that will take an assessment of how we did, how well did we do, a little bit like the last paper that you presented on the quality of CEDA evaluation, but you are way ahead of us there. Okay. In conclusion, we need to know what works, why, and how, and we need to move from contribution to attribution. That is a decision that has been taken in EFED. It is important to reflect on who is responsible, who is accountable, and who needs to know, because this is what will drive your design, this is what will drive the costs, this is what will drive your chances of mainstreaming impact evaluation. We have decided to adopt a diversity of methods until we get wiser, and if we can, when we get in a position to make solid recommendations to our clients on what works best in relation to cost effectiveness of these methods. We want to move towards more local capacity building. It is important that impact evaluation is not an external imposition from ODA partners. It needs to be owned by the implementers themselves. It cannot be the case that the people say, I'm too busy implementing my project, I don't have time to do impact evaluation. You're probably not doing your project well if you don't pay attention to the impact that you have, and then how to finance. My last couple of sentences. In the future, it's too early. The work is going on. By the end of 2050, we will have some conclusions here. But in the future, what we think we will do is to basically generalize the requirement for high-quality baselines on our entire portfolio, okay, at the baseline. But then the second is we would... And having a baseline, high-quality baselines, but also completion surveys, then allows us to do the statistical analysis that was referred to on the impact that we have. We would, at every year, select, every three-year cycle, select nine projects that are strategically significant. Projects that we think are particularly important, particularly innovative, particularly successful, because we want to deepen our learning there. And this is where we go into the much deeper analysis for attribution. What I would also like to convince IFED about is to keep on the agenda RCTs, but focusing on our innovation agenda, not necessarily on our scaling up agenda, but on the pieces of innovation. Poverty changes. We need to think every single time again on how we deal with poverty, and to have a small number of projects by theme to do RCTs allows us to experiment, to learn, and deal with that external validity because we have a number of projects in that particular group. And of course, the ad hoc studies. So this is what I can see in the future IFAD would move to. And with this, I would like to thank you for your kind attention and the opportunity to share this with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Thomas.